Hey friends, from Baylor University in Waco, Texas, I'm Zen Hess, and you are listening to Currents in Religion, a podcast brought to you by the Department of Religion at Baylor University and by Baylor University Press. Thanks for listening today. So I am recording this introduction on Wednesday, November 16th, and many folks in our department, the religion department here at Baylor and at Baylor Press, many of us are gearing up to head to Denver, Colorado for AARSBL. And for those of you who are not a part of the academic religious studies world on a regular basis, AAR is the American Academy of Religion, and SBL is the Society of Biblical Literature. And every year, these two major academic societies host their meetings simultaneously. Thousands of people gather in a major city for lectures and seminars to exchange ideas and present research, to gather with old friends and to make some new ones. And also, of course, to browse the unbelievable book haul. So if you're listening to this and you're coming to AARSBL, come by the Baylor University Press booth and say hi. It's booth number 301. I'd love to meet you. And while you're there, you can enter to win $500 worth of free books simply by dropping your name and some information into a bucket. How rad is that? And also in honor of AARSBL, I will be speaking today with Dave Nelson. You'll recognize Dave's voice from the elevator speech segment of Currents. He is the director of Baylor Press, and he very kindly made time to chat with me about AARSBL from a publisher's perspective. And while I couldn't get him to say whether Denver is his favorite city or not, he does give some honest takes about networking, publishing, and how COVID might transform the role of AARSBL in the years to come. If you don't plan to come to AARSBL this year, his advice might still be relevant for those of you who will attend other sorts of conferences and hope to make connections with people in the publishing world or in the academic world more broadly. So enjoy the conversation, and I hope to see you at the meetings. Dave Nelson, director of Baylor University Press, thanks for joining us on Currents in Religion.
Thank you.
You know, I say that, but now I realize that you're on most of our episodes because you are the host of Elevator Speeches.
Indeed.
Yeah. Great.
Glad to be here on the main episode.
That's right. Yeah, you've made it.
we all move up in the world from time to time, don't we?
That's right. Dave, first things first, this is our AARSBL special episode. So tell us, where does Denver rank on the list of cities that AARSBL takes place in?
Denver's great. It's a great town. I'm very excited about going back, excited that the meetings are there this year. There's a great convention center where the meetings take place, a great exhibit hall. The layout is good. Denver is easy to get into and out of. The airport is easy to use. It's a bit a ways out of the city center, so it takes a while to get in, but it's the transportation is not a problem. That's something I think about quite a bit. Around the convention center in the downtown area, there's lots of great restaurants. It's not all chains, so there are restaurants that are unique to Colorado and to Denver.
Do you have any restaurants right that are top-notch? Any recommendations?
I do. There's a really good Mexican restaurant named Tamayo, which is right down the road from the convention center, and I went there last year and have a reservation there this year. There are two restaurants. One, I believe, is called the Corner Office, which is right across the way from the convention center. I mean, it's just two blocks of a walk. And it's a local joint. It's got a really interesting vibe inside and a great menu. So I like that about Denver. Some places that these meetings are held, you have a lot of chains right next to the convention center. And that's really all there is to choose from as far as meals are concerned. But I like the fact that you can go and get something that's kind of unique and have a unique dining experience. as well. Yeah, these are the kinds of things that publishers tend to think about,
yeah.
right? It's really funny, Zen. Every time I'm preparing for the meeting, someone hears where I'm going, and they say, "Oh, wow, you're going to San Diego, or you're going to San Antonio, or you're going to Denver. Are you going to go to Estes Park while you're out there, or are you going to go see a Broncos game? Are you going to the art museum?" No, I have to go and spend most of my time in a very small, limited area for hours on end. Meeting with people, doing what we do as publishers. That's why we're there.
Yeah.
And so what we tend to look for are the ease of transportation, restaurants and amenities, and then the general layout yeah. of the convention center. And Denver hits high marks on all of those scores. So I'm very excited to be back there.
Nice. Very good. Well, okay. I know that the Graduate Lounge has been buzzing with excitement the past few weeks, really. One of my friends made his SBL schedule, I think, the first week of September. So people are excited, and they're excited about giving papers, about seeing friends, making new connections, all of these sorts of things. What excites you personally about these sorts of conferences?
This is a great question, Zen, and I've done the math in my head. This is my 16th annual meeting.
Wow.
16. So the very first one, I was an MDiv student, and I was meeting my eventual doctoral supervisor for the first time, and I was bewildered.
And who was that?
John Webster yeah. At Aberdeen. And the first meeting was just overwhelming. There mm-hmm. was so much going on, so many people. Didn't really know what I was getting into. The next four meetings, I was there as a graduate student. I believe I presented two papers during that stretch, but really was there just to make connections, build network, talk to people about publishing and potential jobs, look around the exhibit hall, and just have fun. Mm-hmm. So I have very fond memories of those 4 years of it just being kind of just a good time to do what we do as scholars when we network and build those friendships and relationships. Then I had a meeting in 2011 when I was interviewing for several jobs and presenting a paper that I didn't have any business presenting. I was presenting out of my league. And so the whole time I was terrified. It was very stressful. And then the last 10, including this one, I've been a professional publisher.
Right.
And for my meetings, excitement is perhaps not the best word that I would use to describe my mood going into these meetings. For us in the publishing world, these are very, very busy
yeah.
Meetings. This is a right. busy week for us. Many years ago, I heard someone in the publishing world describe this week as, quote, our Super Bowl, unquote. And I kind of bought into that idea for a little while, but then I realized, wait, there is no winner at the end, and there's no ticker tape parade.
Sure.
We don't go to Disney World after it's all over. Usually we get done after the week, and we just curl up in fetal position and wait for Thanksgiving, right? For us, it's just really busy, a lot of conversations, a lot of business, a lot of things thrown our way. But mainly, it's an opportunity for us to bring our books and what we do before the readers that we serve.
Yeah.
So it's a very important kind of a high-stakes event for us. And for my part, going in, trying to pace myself and make sure that I attend to self-care mm-hmm. is very important. But, you know, I look back upon my own experiences, and I realize that these meetings mean different things to different people in different stages of their career.
Yeah.
And, I mean, especially for graduate students and young PhDs who are, you know, maybe not facing some of the immediate pressures that others are, and some people going to, you know, interview faculty members coming on board, or they've got big book deals. But for those who don't have such things, have fun, make a network, build relationships, spend time talking about ideas, because that kind of thing happens at these events in a way that maybe doesn't in other venues and opportunities.
Yeah. I'd like to follow up, I think, on something that you've mentioned. I know that we've had conversations in the past where You were talking about building out your schedule for ARSBL and what that would look like as a publisher. And I'd love for our listeners to kind of just get a window in to what this week does look like for you all. As the director of a press, what wisdom might you have for people hoping to make meaningful connections with publishers, with other sorts of professional folks that might be beneficial in the long run?
That's a great question. I think if there's an idea, maybe a rule of thumb to keep in mind, it would be to be self-aware when you're meeting with someone, or to recognize that the other person, you know, may have had, whether they're interviewing you for a potential job or discussing a book project with you or talking about some other connection that could be lastingly meaningful. The first impression is very important, and the person on the other side may very likely be in the busiest week that they'll have of the entire year.
Yeah.
So I'm in publishing, and this is, for me, I was in acquisitions for many years, and now I'm the director of a press. I don't work behind the booth,
right?
But what I do is meet with authors and talk about projects. That usually begins from about 7 in the morning and lasts sometime until about midnight.
Wow.
So it's hours and hours and hours and hours of talking about ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you a couple of funny stories here. One would be, I vividly recall, I won't name any names because I'm going to be on my best behavior here. But I remember one time being at our reception. This is back when I worked not for Baylor University Press, but for Baker Academic. And I was at our reception, and someone cornered me to present to me their doctoral dissertation topic, and went on for maybe about 15 minutes without really a pause for a breath. It was astonishing. Actually, I think I witnessed a medical miracle because they just went on and on and on without even pausing to give me a moment to just ask a question or interject. Finally, we got to the end, and I informed this individual that we don't publish or didn't publish doctoral dissertations at Baker Academic, so the whole conversation was not going to lead anywhere.
Yeah,
that was a moment where someone was just eager. They came to the meetings ready to do what they needed to do to get their dissertation under contract somewhere, but didn't do the kind of research. They weren't thinking about what was going on on the other side of the equation. And that didn't go anywhere and left a bad impression, in my mind, of course. I know that, that I'm speaking as a publisher here. Every year, we'll see a few dozen people who have a book idea. Maybe it's their doctoral dissertation, or maybe it's a project that they've been working a long time on.
Mm-hmm.
And their approach to finding a publisher is to go and buy from Office Max or something, one of those big packs of paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And print proposals until the paper runs out. They walk around with a stack of proposals, dozens and dozens and dozens deep, and they just hand them out to unsuspecting editors and publishers in the exhibit hall. I call it the scattershot approach.
Uh-huh.
I'm just the way if I get my proposal out to every single publisher I can find, surely one of them will come around and give me a book contract. I don't know. It certainly has never worked in my experience where that's led to a good publishing relationship. And I don't know if it has elsewhere also. Usually we publishers sort of huddle up with each other and talk about the goofballs that come around and do that sort of thing. I think then if that's the sort of negative way to describe or to answer the question, to put it in more positive terms, being deferential to the other person, building a relationship, being self-aware about what you're doing, those are the kinds of things that ultimately, whether it's publishing or whether it's a faculty position, whether it's a new network of scholarship, usually those things flourish when the relationships flourish.
Right.
So to start out doing something that works against the relationship could end up backfiring. So I always encourage folks to just be very self-aware.
Yeah.
You never know what people are bringing into these meetings. So go in with a little bit of, you know, just how you're acting and how you might be perceived.
Yeah.
Is a good idea.
You are listening to Currents in Religion, and we are having a conversation with Dave Nelson, the director of Baylor University Press. Yeah, and I'm hearing too. I mean, you've mentioned a couple of times now just how busy this week is for you. So for someone like me, where I get the freedom to schedule whatever session I'd like to go to and the meetings that I'd like to have, and to leave space where I want to leave space, this is very much just a full and maybe a double time work week for you all. And it sounds like maybe. I know you well enough to know that a stranger coming up and shaking hands and saying, "Hey, I'm so-and-so, who are you?" You're going to engage with them and with kindness. But I think there is a sense in which you're saying, I don't have time to hear everything that people might want to tell me in this space. I've made a schedule with people who have reached out to me or who I know I needed to connect with. And so there's a sense in which maybe for publishers, I guess I don't know if I should speak generally. You can maybe tell me from your huddling up with other publishers. But for publishers, it might be the best approach for someone in my situation or a PhD student looking to publish their dissertation or something along those lines to simply meet the editors and publishers
Indeed.
That are present there, to introduce themselves and to ask if they can follow up. That would be a good first touch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's the possibility of the beginning of a relationship.
Yeah.
That's a splendid alternative to just finding a warm body who happens to have a publisher's tag on and dropping a proposal in their hands.
Yeah.
It's those sorts of, at the end of the day, that's really what it's all about. It's about, I mean, even the theme this year, right, is reconnecting, right? We're connecting with each other once again. Idea behind that is that last year the numbers were down, and those of us, I know you were there at the meeting last year in San Antonio. We're coming out of COVID, and there weren't as many people as normally are there. Well, this year they're expecting a big crowd, so we're reconnecting with one another and revisiting important relationships that we already have, but also building new and existing ones. And I think that for those who, you know, whether they're looking, again, for a publishing opportunity, whether they're wanting to build out a research network, looking for possible, positions down the road, I think that the best approach is to focus on the relational aspect of what we do. I think that's really, at the end of the day, and apologies to our listeners if I sounded a bit slightly cynical in some of my publisher's remarks here, but if I can turn it into a positive, these meetings are very important when it comes to those connections and relationships. And the more we can do going in to really build that out, the better. So my secret is I might gripe about, it's sun up to sundown, know, and beyond. I've got all these meetings lined up. The reality is, 90% of those meetings are with people that I already know really well and really enjoy spending time with them. And so that, to my mind, is what makes these meetings genuinely exciting. And kind of going back to your original question, is I get to hang out with people that I really enjoy, really, really know well, and build those existing relationships.
Yeah. You brought up COVID and the way that it impacted not just last year's, but also the years before. And I'm curious, this AARSBL has been a staple in academic religious life for some time. How do you think that a conference like this will continue on in the future? Have you thought about how COVID might have long-term affected these sorts of meetings and their significance in academic life?
Well, I think it remains to be seen exactly what the impact of COVID will be. And we're about to see next week. I know the numbers of pre-registrations have already been published, and then we'll see how the event actually unfolds. Now, here's my hunch. If you go back a few years before COVID, there was a sense, especially with the smaller conferences, that perhaps there were too many. There were a lot of little conferences just popping up all over the place, right? Travel calendars were very busy for most in our world, whether in scholarship or ancillary to scholarship, like in publishing. We were just traveling all the time. And I talked to a lot of people in publishing. I talked to a lot of people in academia who were wary and weary of the travel, right? Yeah. And COVID, among all of the different things that it did, is it sort of brought all of that to a grinding halt.
Yeah.
What it also did is it forced the world to learn how to use Zoom and Teams and all of these electronic means to stay connected. I would not be surprised, Zen, if a lot of smaller conferences either disappear or they gravitate towards a digital environment.
Right.
Right? We're in an inflationary and potentially recessionary economy for the foreseeable future, and we may not have the vast majority of us have the funds to travel at our leisure anymore, at least for the time being. So a shift away from some of the smaller conferences to they either fade away or they end up going virtual online or some kind of component. I would not be surprised if that happens, in which case the meetings that are starting next week take on even more significance,
right?
So this is just a hunch. It will be interesting to see how it plays out over the course of the next few years. But I would not be surprised if during the present decade, the AARSBL meetings become even bigger, both in terms of their size and in terms of their significance, because there's an urgency to make use of this event, because it's the big one that we can all go to and we can do the most business networking and conversing.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to see what happens over the next 5 to 10 years and where things go. Okay, last question. I'm hesitant to ask it because I know how busy you are, but are there any sessions that you are going to be able to go to that you're excited about?
You were right to be hesitant, simply because this is funny, because looking back in the last few years, usually if I go to a session, it's a session that, you know, heaven forbid, I'm presenting at the session. And I love those, not because of my own performance of a paper, but simply because before and after my own presentation, I get to sit there for a few moments and just relax for a little bit, which is great. No such luck this year, which is fine by me. Instead, though, I've got an opportunity to hear a panel on a book that I acquired many years ago for Baker Academic by Tom Greggs, who's a dear friend of mine. And it's the first volume of a big project that he's putting together, Dogmatic Ecclesiology.
Ecclesiology book,
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. That will be an opportunity. When I moved positions, I had to leave behind a lot of projects that I had started with authors who became dear friends in the course of preparing the proposals and acquiring. And that was definitely one of the hardest ones to leave behind. So to be able to go to a session and to support Tom and to support the book that in that case I did actually bring all the way through, offered critical feedback to Tom and kind of went back and forth as I normally do as an editor, and just could not be happier with how it turned out.
Yeah.
So to be able to go and hear, just to be in the room, to hear the presenters engage with that work, I'm very excited about that. So that may end up being it. I've also circled a few that, you know, are of interest to me.
Sure.
And if I get a chance to break away and duck into them, I'll definitely do that. But yeah, normally in our world, we're sort of visiting the papers themselves sparingly. If I could go back to, you asked a little bit ago, we talked about other meetings, the smaller events. Mm-hmm. The one thing I do like about those smaller events, and we just had one we were both at here at Baylor a couple of weeks ago, is usually at the smaller events, because of the way they're laid out, because mm-hmm. of the way the schedule unfolds, I get a chance to sit into and listen to a lot of papers at those right. smaller events. And I enjoy that part still. I enjoy, hearing papers and listening to the discussions, every now and then even participating in the conversations. For AAR, SBL, it's usually just we're kind of trying to get, from 1 hour to the next
right.
without collapsing. So we'll see.
Well, I'm glad to see you before that. Thank you for making some time with us, especially, this is what we're recording this the Friday before things start. So I know that you're very busy. Thanks for making time to join us to give us a little bit of insight on the experience of a publisher at SBL, AAR SBL, and how those of us who are not in the publishing world might get to know you all and respect the business of your week. And I'll look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Once again, I would like to say thank you to Dave Nelson, the director of Baylor University Press, for making some time to talk with us about his experience as a publisher at AAR SBL. Dave, we'll be thinking about you this week and all of the work that you have to do. I hope it goes smoothly and that you get some rest in the middle of all of it. And for all of you who will be attending AAR SBL, I want to reiterate, please come by the booth, the Baylor University Press booth, and say hi. I would love to get to know some of you in person, to hear about what you're working on, to hear about the sessions you've enjoyed at the meetings. So come by and hang out. And don't forget, you can enter for a chance to win $500 worth of Baylor University Press books at the booth. So come by and say hello and enter for your chance to win. And now, I'm going to reintroduce Dave Nelson, who is going to introduce you to a Baylor Press author and one of their new books.
You're listening to The Elevator Speech, an occasional feature of Currents in Religion, a Baylor Religion Department and Baylor University Press podcast. I'm your host, Dave Nelson, director of Baylor University Press. Today on The Elevator Speech, we're joined by Dr. Daryl R. Ireland, research assistant professor of mission at Boston University and editor of Visions of Salvation, Chinese Christian Posters in an Age of Revolution, to be released by Baylor University Press in April of 2023. Dr. Ireland, thanks for being with us today. What's your elevator speech for this beautiful book, Visions of Salvation? What's the big idea?
Well, Dave, when most of us think of Chinese propaganda, we picture Mao Zedong towering over farmers or maybe Red Guards with his hand outstretched as he guides and blesses the creation of a communist utopia. And there's a reason for that. When Mao came to power, he erased his competition. We may not remember this today, but before the proliferation of Mao the Revolutionary, Chinese Christians had been producing propaganda of Jesus the Revolutionary. In fact, between 1925 and 1950, Christians printed millions of posters as they aggressively challenged, co-opted, and subverted the messages of Mao Zedong's Communist Party and Chiang Kai-shek's Nationalist Party. Although both parties talked extensively about how to save the nation, Christians were confident that only Jesus could do that, and they communicated their vision of redemption through propaganda posters. Jesus is the one who eliminates class differences. He destroys superstition, enlightens ignorance, and even drives out foreign aggressors. It is the gospel that provides solutions for moral and institutional reforms, offers physical healing and well-being, and explains what roles women can play in modern China. Christians pasted up their answers to the pressing questions that China faced on city walls, temple gates, and in tea rooms. Or they simply unfolded their posters and talked about them in public squares. For 25 years, Christian posters saturated the Chinese visual landscape. But as I said, when Mao conquered China, he also vanquished his foes. Christian posters were destroyed. The only ones that I have found escaped with missionaries or refugees. And now, for the first time, they are being printed for the public. This book, Visions of Salvation, reproduces in full color almost 250 of these extraordinary prints. But this is not a coffee table book. It's a pioneer in the study of Christianity in China. It has been assembled by experts from different fields and asked them each a simple question. What do you see in these posters? We have chapters from Chinese political historians and social historians, artists, theologians, physiologists, and experts in visual culture. Combined, they help us see the second quarter of the 20th century with new eyes. Much more was going on than a struggle between communists and nationalists. Christians were also charging into the fray and creatively offering their own compelling visions of salvation. It's so counterintuitive to the history we've imagined, you have to see it to believe it.
It's an important book, it's a path-breaking book, and it's a beautiful book. Thank you, Dr. Ireland, for sharing your elevator speech with us.
Oh, and thank you, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity.
You've been listening to The Elevator Speech, an occasional feature of Currents in Religion, a Baylor Religion Department and Baylor University Press podcast. I'm Dave Nelson, director of Baylor University Press, and my guest today has been Dr. Daryl R. Ireland, author of Visions of Salvation, Chinese Posters in an Age of Revolution. Available from Baylor University Press in April of 2023.
Hey there, it's Zen again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Currents in Religion. If you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and to leave a review to let us know how we're doing. Until next time, thanks for listening. Take care.